Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast Park Fans. We're a podcast for theme park fans, and we're here every week talking about things in the theme park world. I'm Bex. This is Kev.
Hi, everyone.
And once again, we're joined by our favourite American in the whole of the USA, Mark Rosenzweig from TDX Scenic. Welcome back to Parkcast.
That's a tall order to stand up to, favourite American these days, but well, I appreciate it. Thanks,
you
guys.
You know what? No one else has come close. I'll be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm the only option, then that's fine.
Yeah. if you're listening to this and you are American and you think you can do a bit better than Mark and you are more personable, I challenge you to get in touch. But
definitely. Challenge you to see if you know as much as Mark. And when it comes to roller coasters, there's no one else out there that is as clued in to all of his knowledge
as
Mark is.
It's not going to happen. Anyway, if you haven't heard Mark on the podcast before, you've done a few episodes now. I feel like I keep dragging you back. But Mark is also the chief business officer for 3DX Scenic, who make park props and like fancy stuff that goes into theme parks.
Core, custom fabrication, portals, parade floats, signage, everything but the ride, essentially.
So, you've just gone straight into marketing mode there.
Love it.
So, Mark, tell me about what you do.
Elevator pitch, go.
It is some really, really cool stuff. Really like huge, big set pieces and props and stuff. And you're working with a theme park at the moment and you're making a massive nutcracker.
Yeah, I mean, these are things that I'm numb to talking about, but it was announced about 2 weeks ago, Lagoon Park, one of my favorite parks in the world, really. And we'll talk a little bit about it today on the road trip, the last episode of Road Trip. But they're located right outside of Salt Lake City, Utah, and they're installing one of those 100-foot tall SNS worldwide screaming swing, the one with the 40 seats. And it is next to their beer garden, Oktoberfest themed. And they decided they wanted to conceal one of the air tanks by cladding it with a 50-foot tall German nutcracker stove. So that is what we are in the midst of creating right now.
I love that.
That's amazing.
It's also multi-seasonal. I don't know if it's the same in the US, but here, nutcrackers, very important part of the festivities for Christmas, and they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they can just dress it up for Christmas as well.
Absolutely. You know, it's an all-year thing. It's really going to become an icon for the park, I think, because unlike a lot of the larger, the corporate parks here that have a lot of coasters, Lagoon has a really solid collection of rides. But this particular flat ride will be far and away the largest flat ride they have. And it's really going to redefine their skyline.
Yeah. Well, I love that it's sort of Oktoberfest themed as well. I love that Oktoberfest has literally made it to like the west coast of the USA.
It seems to be like moving across the world.
This could be some very confused Germans.
We all need an excuse to drink, guys. So, I mean, it's just an alibi, just a reason to throw a liter back. It's all good.
Well, we've been wondering where the Lederhosen lady from Drayton Manor is. Maybe she's over there. Maybe she can be installed, you know.
From Drunken Barrels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. She's going to turn up at some point. We just don't know where.
Or you could recreate her. I'm sure you've got the facilities.
Yeah, it's not the same.
I would love to. That would be a dream.
Yeah. I'm sure it would. But moving swiftly on. So you are here today to finish off our little series on achievable theme park road trips, which if you're a theme park enthusiast, you might dream of doing some parks over in the US. We've always said it can seem like just a massive minefield and so complicated to know where to start. So Mark's very kindly been putting us together some itineraries that are really achievable and aren't going to make you feel like you need another holiday at the end of your trip to the US, which, you know, it could seem that way if you're trying to fit in 30 parks in 2 weeks. So we are going to finish off on the West Coast today. Very quickly, before we get into that, though, I'm just wondering how things are in the US with your park. So are you like us now? Are you kind of into closed season?
We're getting there. A lot of seasonal parks just had their last weekend of operation as their Halloween events closed out this past weekend. Several will continue on operating through the fall, through November, their bonus weekends. And then there are still quite a few like Kings Island and Hershey Park and Canada's Wonderland and Carowinds that have Winterfest or Holiday in the Park Christmas events. And then, of course, the typical Florida, Southern California parks remain open all year. They still will remain open. So yes, we're getting to the getting towards the end here of park season, and it's a little sad, but of course, and we're getting, you know, IAAPA expos around the corner, and there'll be a lot of news and excitement, and then we have next year to look forward to.
Yeah, and I guess you've got a lot more openings next year than we have. We've got a great flat ride coming to the Pleasure Beach. We've got a really exciting investment by Paultons with their Eurofighter. And we've got the Bluey roller coaster at Aunt House. And I think that's it for us.
Don't forget Paw Patrol at Chesterton.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about Thorpe Park, actually. Have Thorpe Park announced anything?
I don't think Thorpe Park are doing anything for the next 10 years.
The biggest ride that I'm certainly looking forward to at Six Flags Over Texas next year, and this was announced since we had our last talk where we talked about a Texas road trip, Tormenta Rampaging Run, which would be the first giga dive coaster. So I'm looking at the stats here. It will have a 309-foot lift hill, a 285-foot first drop at a 95-degree angle. So it will be the steepest as well.
Dive coasters as well. Okay, right. I'm getting getting over there.
Just insane. And the track length, I mean, it's just shy of 4,200 feet for a dive coaster. Now, you think Oblivion, where this started, that what is that, like 10 feet long? So we've come a long way with the genre. It's really going to be something. Really, really redefine the park. And Texas is very flat, especially the Metroplex. And this park's skyline, you can actually see as you're landing at DFW Airport. So this is going to really redefine the west side of the park. I'm really excited for it.
I love that another dive coaster is being built. I kind of thought we might have all moved on, but they're back with a bang.
And we have Coda Land opening in Texas, too. So Texas is really turning for new things the place to be in 2026. I forgot what year it's going to be next year. But whole new theme park down at Circuit of the Americas that'll have a Vekoma Tilt Coaster, a Gerstlauer Infinity Coaster, a Flume Ride, assortment of flat rides. So definitely go back to episode 2 and listen towards the end. We talked about Texas. That's definitely something you want to put on your radar.
Yeah, and of course, home to the Roller Coaster Museum, which we talked about.
Yes,
which we talked to you about last time. So, not that it's open to the public just yet, but it's coming. It's coming.
We are getting closer.
Yeah, that's a really, really cool thing that you're involved with as well. Right, on to these road trips then. So we are in the UK. We are thinking we want to go and ride some roller coasters in the USA, and we are planning a road trip so we can go to a few parks. We've done some itineraries already. We're heading today to the Pacific Northwest. Which area is this for us heathens in the UK who don't know our geography very well?
So I'm thinking generally the states of Oregon and Washington, but then we're also going to carry on into Canada, into British Columbia, the province of British Columbia, and then east to the state of Idaho. So this is not an area very dense with roller coasters. In fact, like a lot of these trips, I get really excited about local culture, local food, roadside attractions, and just urban hiking through cities. And you've got a lot of great cities: Portland, Oregon, Vancouver, British Columbia, Spokane, Washington, and of course Seattle, Washington. They're all amazing cities, amazing food scene. And you've got two really large international airports, Seattle Tacoma International and Vancouver International Airport in British Columbia. You could pick either of those and use that as your launch point, essentially. Park-wise, again, this is definitely quality over quantity, and there's a couple of scheduling challenges with this trip. It's almost impossible to do everything with the big fairs, because this area of the country or North America has two very large fairs that happen. One of which, the fairgrounds, this is the Washington State Fairgrounds, which is just south of Seattle, has a wooden roller coaster that is on the grounds all year that operates as part of a spring fair and then a fall fair. And that is in mid-September. And so the challenge kind of comes up. The parks are on weekend operation by then. So you really kind of have to pick and choose what you want to do there. If you really scamper and you move quickly, you can theoretically hit Playland, which is at the Pacific National Exhibition in Vancouver, Wild Waves Theme Park, which is in Federal Way, Washington, near Seattle, and the Washington State Fair, all in the same trip. The challenge would be you'd almost have to pick between Silverwood, which is 5 hours to the east in Idaho, or the parks closer to Seattle. But starting with that, so Silverwood is, I would call that the premier theme park in the Pacific Northwest. It's family owned. It's built on the site of a former airport. The founder of the park used to fly planes and all that, and then just develop his theme park. That was one of his dreams. He was an entrepreneur. And the first big coaster that they installed there is actually very historically significant. It is the original prototype corkscrew from Arrow Development that originally opened in 1975 at Knott's Berry Farm. So, major undertaking because back in the late 80s, Knott's had seen that the ride had run its course and they had purchased a Vekoma boomerang to replace the corkscrew and put the corkscrew in sale. And Silverwood bought it and it opened for their opening season. And then they had other rides like a flume ride and a rapids ride and a very pretty Victorian Main Street when you walk in with an amazing train ride that takes you all the way out in the woods with live entertainment and all that. And then it wasn't until the mid-90s when they took their next leap, kind of following the path that Holiday World took. They called up Custom Coasters International and said, "We want a wooden roller coaster. We feel like we're ready. We want a custom ride. We feel like that's going to put us on the map." And sure enough, it did. So in 1996, a ride called Grizzly opened at Silverwood. Now, here's the little trick with Grizzly. It was only called Grizzly for 1 year. Paramount Parks, King's Entertainment and Paramount, apparently they had the trademark for the name Grizzly to use on roller coasters, which they had a ride at King, they still do at King's Dominion and California's Great America. So Silverwood then was forced to change the name of the ride. So it was changed to Timber Terror, which it is still called to this day. It's a great out and back wooden coaster, traditional airtime, great ride. And I don't know if they still do it, but during their Halloween event, they used to run the train on it backwards. I'm not sure if that's still a thing or not, but they would do that periodically. 3 years later, they introduced what I consider to be one of the best. Now it's, I guess, a hybrid coaster. I'm not really sure. I know that it's had some steel track put on it and what, but it's Tremors, which is another coaster that is off the radar for a lot of people from over, abroad. It is just a bonkers, crazy custom ride that has four underground tunnels. And if you picture it, you drop into right through the gift shop, and then you launch out over the Midway into an amazing airtime hill, right back underground. And then you do a bulk of the course. And then to finish the ride, you do the same underground, over the Midway, through the gift shop again. Going the opposite direction before coming back to the station. It's just like a completely bonkers, one of a kind, amazing attraction. And then you mix into that the other coasters there. They have one of the giant inverted boomerangs from Vekoma that was relocated from Six Flags Great America. And then a few years back, they put in an RMC Raptor single rail coaster. So it's a really solid mix. And then they also have their Boulder Beach Water Park, which has all the typical family raft rides, mat racers, wave pool, lazy river, all that. So it's at least a full day. It is remote. You know, from Seattle, you're looking at least a 5 hour drive. It's actually about an hour from Spokane, Washington, would be the biggest. But Coeur d'Alene, Idaho is a gorgeous mountain resort area. There's a lot, lots of recreational activity. So, but that Silverwood really is the park. If you go to the Pacific Northwest, put that on your list. It is homespun, family owned, amazing. So
Sounds
then,
awesome.
yeah, and I'm trying to think what I would almost compare it to, like an Oakwood type of deal because of how remote it is. You know, you just drive and drive and drive, and you get there, and then you have that megaphobia type of ride. So to I would compare it closest to that in the UK. So then back towards Seattle, we have the aforementioned Washington State Fair, which has a classic wooden coaster that originally dates from the 20s, but it has been fully rebuilt over the past decade or two. It still runs the original Pryor and Church trains with the open fronts, with the flanged wheels. It's really an amazing ride from another era. Not something that would be out of place, say, at Blackpool, you know, just one of those classic golden era wooden roller coasters. And they've got one of those Von Roll cableways, the gondola skyride, and then several other coasters that are there all year that operate for the fair, like a Schwarzkopf Wildcat. In America, we have state fairs that are just, I can't say enough. Like, you really need to experience an American state fair because it combines usually a great carnival midway, but also local culture, local food, Sometimes you'll see a hall full of what's called crop art. So an artist will make a mural of famous person using kernels of corn, just sort of tongue-in-cheek, you know, humorous type of thing. But it's art. It's amazing and highly recommend that. Wild Waves, which is near there, just south of Seattle. It's a park that's managed by Premier Parks, and it's mostly a water park. It's a hybrid family park water park. There is a wooden coaster there. They've got a decent selection of flat rides. I would say it's a half day park if you're going for just the rides, but if you're doing the water park, it could be a full day for sure. Timberhawk is their wooden coaster, and they've got an Arrow Corkscrew and a Zamperla Wild Mouse, and it's very close to Seattle itself, so you can tie that in with a visit to the city. Very close to the airport too, so that could be your first stop when you arrive. And then I would argue to say my favorite city in all of North America, we haven't really gotten to this besides Chicago, is Vancouver, BC. It is just, from an urbanist standpoint, it is heaven. Freeways going through the city. It is just surface streets, functional mass transportation, amazing local cuisine. Very, very strong, like Seattle, strong Asian influence. So you have amazing Asian cuisine there. And then, of course, you have the seafood from the Pacific, you know, Dungeness crab, you name it, salmon, king salmon. It's just really, really good stuff. So the park in Vancouver is called Playland, and it's located at the Pacific National Exhibition. And this is another big fair. It's the biggest fair in Western Canada, and it runs for the 10 days leading up to Labor Day, which is the first Monday in September in North America. So you don't need to visit during the fair because this park is open like a seasonal park through the whole year. Their roller coaster, which is very creatively called Coaster, dates from the 50s, and it is the oldest operating roller coaster in the entire country of Canada, believe it or not. And it is an ejector airtime machine. It needs to be ridden to be believed. And it is very far off the beaten path for most travelers. So a lot of people, especially from Europe, unless you're on a coaster group tour or something, don't generally get to this place. But I would argue to say the beauty of Vancouver coupled with a day at the Playland is just amazing and definitely worth doing. And again, you've got Vancouver Airport and you have SeaTac, Seattle Tacoma International Airport there. And I will also say that at the PNE Playland, they have an amazing roster of flat rides, a lot of old Huss flat rides, like a Topspin, which is becoming rarer and rarer to find. You've got a lot of modern flat rides. And then last year or the year prior, they opened Thunderbolt, which is a launch coaster from Zamperla. It runs a lightning train on it. It's an LSM launch. And it's an interesting ride because it sort of combines an old Intamin accelerator coaster that used to operate in Italy. So I believe the story was Zamperla acquired the ride and then basically refurbished it and put their launch system on it and their train on it. And now that is the big steel coaster at the park. And it's done extremely well. And it's been really popular. So it's a great 1-2 punch with the wooden coaster.
Is that a bit really like good. What they did with Top Thrill Dragster?
I guess you could say that, yeah. It's taking an old accelerator coaster and making it LSM. It's just more reliable. And, you know, let's face it, the accelerator coasters, I think, deliver the best launch. You know, the experience of that launch is just breathtaking, but reliability-wise, they've become challenges, I think. So
yeah.
And also, you know, you've got to go ride a coaster if you get the mark seal of approval, if it's got ejector airtime. It's an ejector airtime machine. That's the mark seal of approval of a good coaster for me. That is so.
I'll tell you the story of my first ride on it. I was working at Ride Entertainment at the time, and we had sold the park the Star Flyer ride from Funtime. And we were there for the media day. And while in between shoots and whatnot, they were running the coaster. So I walked over with my then boss and we rode together in the last row. And I got pitched out of my seat on one. I don't remember. It was like one of these very innocent looking camelback hills halfway through the ride. And I landed right on the seat divider. It was like I guess people had told me the ride was amazing, but I did not go into it expecting like a Coney Island Cyclone or Knoebel's Phoenix type experience. And it was every bit that. So
Did you do the classic not pull the lap bar down further enough just so you could get bum off the seat? That's what I do.
The thing about these old trains is that they're the lap bars. I don't know if it's still this way, but my memory is telling me the lap bar had only one or two locking positions. So it wasn't like a ratcheting bar, like say on Grand National, where
yeah.
you can bring it down to your thigh. Mm-hmm. It just locked in place. And then I think you had a seatbelt. So yeah, it's just one of those, you know, old Perfect. School type of designs. Yeah.
They're the best.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, yeah, I've never heard of that one before. And you have sold it very well. I love the idea of spending a few days in Vancouver up there as well, because that does sound blissful. Yeah. So that's about it then for the Pacific Northwest. There's really not a huge amount of theme parks there. Poor people who live there.
Yeah, they have to fly down to LA, I guess. You know, a lot of them sort of like New Yorkers go to Florida. So
yeah,
same thing, different coast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, as you've mentioned it, let's move further south to Southern California. Now, every theme park enthusiast, I think, has California on the bucket list, mainly for, obviously, original Disneyland. There's a lot of iconic theme parks there. Six Flags Magic Mountain, Knott's Berry Farm. This has got to be one of the most sought after road trips to go and do as a UK theme park enthusiast.
I would say so. And this isn't one we need to spend a ton of time on, because I feel like most of your listeners either know of all these parks or have already been there. I will say, though, that just the culture, diversity, and the weather in Southern California is heaven. you know, I know a lot of people go to Florida and they melt into the asphalt because of the humidity and the extreme heat. California can be very hot, especially July, August, September, but we're talking about, you know, 90 degrees Fahrenheit. If you're by the, you know, the coast, probably more like 60s or 70s, because the Pacific is very cool, but usually no humidity. So, I mean, you're feeling it's very dry air, and it's very it's breathable, we'll call it, you know, even though there is a lot of smog in LA too. As I say breathable, I don't know what you're breathing, but it's one of those things. I always tell people, when you go to California and you go out for the day, you need to, and during the summer, you leave with a you know, a sweatshirt or a jacket, because it could be in the 50s in the morning, 60s in the morning, and then it could go up to 90, and then by 7, 8 p.m. it could drop back to the 60s. So you need to kind of, you know, shed layers and put them back on. It's not like Florida where, you know, 24/7 in July it's 90 degrees and you could just be out in shorts and a t-shirt. So
which is nuts as well, because it's crazy, because you've got like the Death Valley National Park as well, which, when I think about cool,
yeah,
isn't that like one of the hottest places on earth?
It is. And it's also the elevation wise, the lowest elevation in at least in the United States, Death Valley. Mm-hmm. But microclimates in California, for sure. My wife and I took our honeymoon to California. We rented a Mustang convertible in San Diego, and we drove all the way up the Pacific Coast Highway to San Francisco. That's what we wanted to do. And our days in San Francisco, in the city, it was in the 60s. This was in early June. And we went up to wine country in Napa, and it was almost 100 degrees. And we're talking about a 50-mile drive. So it's crazy. And that's why you see that fog where the Golden Gate Bridge gets engulfed in fog, because you have the cool air blowing in versus the warm air that's sitting, you know, coming in from the valley. So,
It's one of those. That is my bucket list things as well, doing that drive up the West Coast, sort of LA to San Francisco. I just think that'd be so cool. And obviously fitting in a few theme parks on the way.
If you are afraid of heights, do the drive going northbound, because you'll be on the inside of the road, because we drive on the right side here.
Yeah.
Not saying that's correct, as in right is correct, but we literally drive on the right side. But if you are more adventurous and your partner who's sitting in shotgun is not too scared, do the southbound drive, because you'll be right on the edge of the cliffs as you're going through.
Okay, northbound it is.
Yeah. And there's lots of cool places to stop along the way, you know, tourist attractions. But yeah, I mean, going down the list of parks, the big parks everybody knows, Disneyland Resort for me is my all-time favorite theme park resort. There's nothing better that I've ever visited. The original Disneyland park will always be my favorite theme park. The density of attractions, the fact that Walt Disney himself, this is the only park of the Disney company parks that he physically walked through and you know, you could see his impact on it. And just the fact that you have a park, I can't think of another park that has a range of attractions from basically a very simple blacklit 2D dark ride like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride to Star Wars: Rise of the Resistance, all in the same gate. That's just bonkers. That's crazy. You know, when you think about that, Indiana Jones Adventure, we've got Matterhorn bobsleds, we've got, you know, go down the list, so many unique attractions and other rides you can find at other Disney parks, but they just feel like they fit in better at this park for some reason.
And they're also like the original as well. And you think of every other attractions that were built across all the other Disney parks around the world, all started from that
So
point,
most of
really.
them, yes. I mean, you have some like Space Mountain and Country Bear Jamboree did actually start in Florida, and then they were replicated in California. But you know, Space Mountain's a different type of ride in California, but nonetheless, it's and then California Adventure, certainly a weaker park than Disneyland. It needs more attractions, but even on its own, you could spend a whole day there. I love the Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout. Initially, I was very much against the removing the Twilight Zone, but what they've done in there, it's just the most fun type of ride. It's addicting. You want to get back in line and do it again.
What's your favorite song on it?
You're putting me on the spot now,
That's what
because
I'm
now
here
I can't
for.
remember. I can't remember the song. I know like September is a popular
That's
one,
the one,
and
isn't it, that
Epcot.
most people go for?
But I don't remember the song mix for the California attraction, if it's the same thing or if it's different. I know there's a Jackson 5 song. There's others, but yeah, it's just really, really well done. And for me, it was always the weaker version of the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror. So to rebrand it, and now it's kind of part of that Avengers campus and rounds it out.
I need to try it out because unfortunately I'm a Twilight Zone Tower of Terror purist, and when they changed it, I was very like, why? But I think that's one of those things where I'm like, well, I have to go on it because I can't really share that opinion until I've been on it, like you say, Mark. Until you've done it, you don't know. So
We're on
I
the
ate a lot of crow on that. I really was against it, and then I did it, and we still have the Twilight Zone in Florida, and it is a vastly better version anyway, so I'm okay with that. So
On the Ferris wheel, do you go on the swinging carriages or the ones that stay still like normal person would go on?
I like the swinging ones, but
Oh, of
of
course
course
he
it
does. Of
but
course he
again,
does.
Bex, I'm a New Yorker. I grew up riding the Wonder Wheel at Coney Island, so that wasn't a new thing for me,
Nothing that
but
does this. Nothing that does that. I don't want the carriage to be doing this.
The Ferris wheel is intimidating enough. I don't need my carriage to be moving.
And they actually have vomit bags in those. That's
Oh,
how, you know,
good.
it's an experience.
Yeah.
But you also have
No.
so talk about
Radiator
Cars Land.
Springs is one of the most
Cars Land
insanely
is
well themed
100%
areas of.
unique to, you know, like when you go to Disney Studios Paris, Walt Disney Studios, you have one flat ride in this like little subsection, and then if you go to Radiator Springs, you'll be even more angry about what Paris doesn't have.
Don't. It's already bad.
It's basically, for me, it is one of the crowning achievements of Walt Disney Imagineering, because you walk down the street very much like when you walk through Hogsmeade at any of the Universal parks, and everything is where it would be in the movie, as if you were in the set, and just the rock work. And I would say the other really impressive thing is how dense Disneyland Resort is, because it bumps up against development on all four sides. So the fact that, you know, the Cadillac Range is basically blocking out utility poles and hotels and chain restaurants and all the other things, you would never know what's behind it. And when you're in front of it and you're eating dinner or lunch at Flo's and watching the cars race by, it's a crowning themed entertainment achievement. And here we are now, it's over 10 years old, and it's still, to me, one of the all-time great. You know, it's up there with Diagon Alley at Universal Studios Florida, as far as I'm concerned, for immersive themed experiences. Really is
Definitely
something.
needed something. Because obviously it was a bit of a
Absolutely.
mess at the start, wasn't it, Mark? So they needed to do something wow to kind of get people going back again, didn't
It does blow my mind that out of all these parks that you've visited, all these coasters you've ridden, not just in the US, but all around the world, your favorite is still Disneyland in California. You just kind of think, God, you've got these huge machines at other theme parks, which you don't have there. But what it comes down to is a great themed experience. And I suppose
It,
that
it's
is.
that it's charm. It's, you know, and the hours of operation at Disneyland are no joke. They're typically open from 8 a.m. to midnight. or 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Like they don't hold back on the hours there, and I have no problem filling a day and not being bored or saying, "Oh, we have 5 more hours." It's no, we only have 5 hours. You know, it really is something. And I would suggest to first time visitors a minimum of a 3 day visit, a 3 day park hopper ticket. They're not cheap, obviously, but that gives you the flexibility because, like in Paris, the two parks gates kind of bump up. They're even closer than in Paris, where from one gate to the other, you're talking about a 5 minute walk, if that, you know, right across the Esplanade. And, you know, you can have a lightning lane for Space Mountain and Radiator Springs Racers at the same time and easily make it back and forth between the two. It's like walking from
Crazy.
the front to back of Cedar Point.
Yeah.
So
It's
it's
crazy.
totally achievable. And then running down the rest of the list, you've got what I like about the park mix in California is it kind of checks every box. So you want thrills, arguably the most famous thrill park maybe in the world, Six Flags Magic Mountain. It's most Brits' first Six Flags park, I think, because they go to LA for Disneyland and Knott's and they add this on. But, you know, I don't remember offhand. I think they're at 20 coasters or maybe it's 19. I'm not sure because Superman just closed. But nonetheless, I mean, every single type of ride from the Aero 4D to the Aero Mine Train to Aero Looper, GCI Woody, Giovanola Hypercoaster, you have the RMC, Mobius Loop, which is interesting. Twisted Colossus, and then you also have West Coast Racers. So you have two rides that allow you to go around the track twice, quote unquote, because it's one circuit, and you go around and you race both times. So it's really really great park, and you know they're putting a lot of money in there, and I do have faith that it's going to return to its glory that where it was last, I'd say in the 90s, early 2000s. I think the new Six Flags company will they recognize the value that park has and the market it's in. And then they have another park in the same market now, Knott's Berry Farm, which for me is, you know, just it's my favorite of now at Six Flags, but I would say it was my favorite Cedar Fair park, just because it is truly a theme park. It's not just a themed amusement park. The ghost town, you know, is immersive. It has nooks and crannies you can explore. It has museums. It has theaters. It has, you know, all kinds of cool things. The ride mix is great. Ghost Rider, for me, is my favorite roller coaster on the West Coast of any coaster. So that's from Vancouver down to California. GCI went in and did a massive refurbishment to it back in 2016, and it runs Millennium Flyer trains, and it's just like close to the perfect wooden coaster. It does a little bit of everything. You have Accelerator, which was the prototype Intamin Accelerator coaster. The launch is right on par with Stealth at Thorpe Park for I think it's that 0 to 82 in 2 seconds or whatever. So it's a good balance. And then there are two flagship rides that are absolutely not to be missed: the Timber Mountain Log Ride, which is custom Aero log flume dating from the late '60s. It really inspired Tony Baxter, the Imagineer, to come up with the Splash Mountain concept because it has indoor, outdoor sections, animatronics, dark ride scenes, a catchy musical score. It's not a soaking ride either, so you can ride it in, you know, cooler weather and still enjoy it. And then you have the Calico Mine Ride, which is a slow moving, as in there's an operator actually driving the locomotive through a bunch of scenes, and you go through the Calico Mine. It has some gravity sections, but it's not drops or anything. There's a mid-course chain lift and different elevation changes, and just a really cool, immersive, unique, funky ride. Those two are absolutely not to be missed at Knott's. And of course, fried chicken.
Oh, is
Then
that
you
the
guys
one?
need that.
Oh,
That's what
fried chicken's
started
not to
the
be missed
park.
anywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
So it started, yeah. So Mrs. Knott's, as in Cordelia Knott, who was Walter Knott's wife, Knott's Berry Farm was a boysenberry farm. They invented the boysenberry, which I'm going to forget what that is, a hybrid of a blackberry and a raspberry, maybe. And it's a tart and sweet flavor. And they sell boysenberry punch all through the park. You can taste it. It's great on a hot day. Sugar bomb. It's great. So she was making her boysenberry pies, and then she had a fried chicken recipe. So they opened the fried chicken restaurant. People would come from all over, wait 2 hours for a table, and people are looking, what are these people going to do while they wait for their table? So that's when Ghost Town opened, and the Knott family found act originally the buildings came from an actual ghost town in California. They relocated them to Knott's Berry Farm. And that gave people something to do while they waited for their chicken dinner. Now, if you go back to our last episode, we talked about Silver Dollar City and where that was born from. They had a big hole in the ground, i.e. Marvel Cave. What are people going to do while they wait for their cave tour? Let's build a little village and see what happens and give people something to do. So Silver Dollar City and Knott's Berry Farm will forever be tied, in my opinion, and a lot of people that work at the parks probably have no idea, but they're both born out of necessity, you know, out of marketing, out of you know, business. And you can see where they're going. Yeah.
And the fried chicken's still good.
It's great. I mean, it's a must do. Either as a break from your day at the park or just something to do on a day you're not doing a park or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, wow. But I mean, if I wasn't convinced before,
chicken.
I love a bit of fried chicken. Out of interest, how easy is it to get between like Disneyland, Knott's Berry Farm, Six Flags Magic Mountain? Those are the three big parks that we hear about. How do you mm-hmm. need a car?
Not really. If you're, you know, it's really, if you want to do, and I would suggest getting a car for part of the trip, because LA is very, very sprawled. It's almost 100 miles from the Inland Empire to the Pacific Ocean. So, I mean, you have a lot of ground to cover. Plus, you want to go down to San Diego because it's gorgeous. You can get around with mass transit and trains, but I would suggest if you're dedicating 5 days, let's say, to Knott's and six and Disneyland Resort, you could stay at either one of the hotels within walking distance of Disneyland, or Knott's Berry Farm has a very nice hotel right on property. You could stay right at Knott's Berry Farm and then Uber over to Disney, or vice versa. You'd probably pay $25, $30 each way, which is basically the cost of park. So kind of wipe that out.
And then Six Flags Magic Mountain is easy.
It's further north. You probably need a car for that. And that I would tie in with Universal Studios Hollywood, because that's on the north side of downtown.
Of course, yeah.
And that's certainly worth at least a day. Most of the attractions at Universal Studios Hollywood you can experience at other Universal parks, but it's all about the tram tour. It will always be all about the tram tour. It's a 45-minute experience that takes you down through a lot of the back lots. You could see Back to the Future. And then the tram actually rides through Kong. So you get basically the cinema tube that on the attraction at Islands of Adventure. So there's a lot of individual, they call them attractions that are part of the tram tour, that at Universal Orlando Resort, they have dedicated attractions for these experiences. So it's kind of like you're checking eight boxes with one sitting down one time. So it's definitely worth it. And I will also say the VIP experience at Universal Studios Hollywood, 100% worth it. It's not cheap. It's going to run you between $350 and $500, but you get valet parking, you get admission to the park, you get a catered meal, and you get all-day express pass. And then on top of that, you get a private tour of the back lot where they take you down in a smaller vehicle, and they park and they let you out so you can actually walk around the sets. So for a first-time visitor, I would highly recommend that. And because you have Express Pass, you don't have to worry about queues for the rides at all.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, it sounds awesome, especially if you're a big film fan. You mentioned going down to San Diego as well. I won't say the quote from Anchorman, even though I really want to. So you've got SeaWorld in San Diego. Anything else down that way?
Yeah, there's a small boardwalk park, which is fun, called Belmont Park. They have a wooden coaster called the Giant Dipper, one of two Giant Dippers in California. It's a Prior and Church design, so it's worth it to, you know, an hour or two stop off. It's right on the ocean. There's some nice restaurants, really nice sushi place up on a balcony overlooking the ocean. It's a nice place to catch a sunset. You can very easily combine SeaWorld San Diego and Belmont Park in one day. The two parks are not even a five-minute drive apart from one another. They're very close.
And of course, you've got San Diego Zoo, as made famous in Anchorman.
Yes. and you have a lot. And I'm a big tiki culture fan. There is a lot of tiki culture in San Diego. There are tiki bars downtown. There are speakeasies. And there are some amazing tiki restaurants all through, because it's just that that culture kind of landed there from the South Pacific post-World War II. So definitely something to look for. San Diego's gorgeous. You know, again, the weather is always great, and people are great. Ooh. And it's, you know, if I could afford to live there, I probably would.
there's a Legoland in California as well. Am I right, Mark?
Yes. So the first Legoland park to open in North America is in Carlsbad, which is about About a half hour drive north of San Diego. So it's an easy stop off the 5 freeway if you're driving to or from San Diego from LA. And it is, I would call it kind of like the Germany Park. It's a bit like a greatest hits of Legoland attraction. So if there's a Legoland attraction you've done, whether it's the Dragon, right down the list, Ninjago, they pretty much have almost everything. They also have a water park, which in that climate works really well, obviously during the summer and the peak. The hotter seasons. And then another family park that opened back in 2022 was Sesame Place, which there is one in Philadelphia area as well. And what United Parks did was they converted an old Aquatica water park to Sesame Place because I think they wanted to tap into that that toddler, say 3 to 8 year old demographic with a legacy intellectual property, which Sesame Street very much is. And our team at 3DX, we actually did a bulk of the retheming for that for United Parks. We did all the facades for the new neighborhood, the Sesame neighborhood, where you have Big Bird's Nest and Hooper's store and all that, and then a bunch of character sculpts. So, and they've got now, I think it's 5 or 6 dry rides, including a family coaster, along with a lot of the pre-existing water park attractions. So it's a nice, if you have young kids, I would definitely put it on your list.
Awesome.
Amazing.
Well, yeah, that's Southern California. Like I said, something I think is on a lot of our bucket list because why wouldn't it be? So many iconic attractions, so many iconic theme parks. Just going slightly further north, you have got Northern California as well, where there's a few parks there if you wanted something a little bit different.
Yeah, and again, this is kind of like in that top tier of North American cities, San Francisco. So regardless of the quantity of major theme parks, absolutely worth going. It's a spectacular city. It has everything, culture, food, everything that you look for in a great city. And so we've got 3 parks, Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk, one of the all-time great seaside parks. I put it right there with Maury's Piers in Wildwood, New Jersey for best seaside park in North America. It has a giant dipper, just like Belmont Park. This one also dates, it's over 100 years old. Old carousel, mix of old and new flat rides, dark rides, and the promenade that just kind of parallels the Monterey Bay. It's gorgeous. There's a long pier, they call them wharfs in the West Coast for some reason. And you go out and there's all the seafood shacks. You can get lunch, you can get a crab meat cocktail and walk with that. It's just from another time period, and it's kept up beautifully. It's family owned and operated. Just absolute top tier amusement park in North America and worth going out of your way for. 45 minutes away in Santa Clara is California's Great America that opened in the mid 70s, and it was initially a near twin of the other Great America Park that opened near Chicago in Gurnee that Marriott's hotel chain opened. And then the two parks were sold off and kind of went their separate ways. And now, ironically, they're back together under the same umbrella as Six Flags Parks here in 2025. So it's a bizarro world, basically. But here we are. And the park itself, it has a modest collection of thrill rides, but I think it has a reputation in the industry of just being one of the best kept theme parks. Everything is kept beautifully. Everything's painted up. Everything looks looked after. Great operations, and honestly, a really solid lineup. They have an old school B&M inverted coaster that it rides like Nemesis. It's just one of those you can't really replicate anymore. There's an RMC single rail. There's one of GCI's best wooden coasters in Gold Striker. There's a great intimate drop ride. Just a well-rounded park. You can easily do a full day there. I would suggest a full day in Santa Cruz as well, even though it's a small park, just to take in. You can get there mid-afternoon and try to time it with a night. They're up until 10 or 11, so you can get that nighttime experience, the vibes on the boardwalk at night during summer are really tough to beat. And then on the north side of San Francisco in Vallejo is Six Flags Discovery Kingdom, which has an interesting history. It originally opened as a marine life park, like a SeaWorld. It was called Marine World. And over time, went through several changes in ownership and management and became a theme park. And so now it's kind of like this hybrid zoological marine life theme park. And it's got rides and marine life shows and a small zoological area with some animal habitats. And there's a great RMC hybrid coaster called the Joker, which was one of the GCI Roar coasters that was converted back about 10 years ago or so. And B&M Medusa, which is a floorless coaster, one of the largest that they ever did. And it's a small park, but it kind of checks all the boxes. It's very varied offerings because you have the sea life stuff and the zoological stuff. It's not just ride after ride after ride. So, but again, you got San Francisco, you have the wine country area. It is geographically and from a culinary standpoint, tough to beat.
Yeah, it is one of those cities that you just think, oh, I've got to see that at some point in my life. That is the end of the road trips. We've covered the whole of the USA and a little bit of Canada, if you can believe it, over these three episodes, which is insane. But I mean, it's given me so many different ideas. There's so many things that I want to do. I know we haven't mentioned Vegas, which it kind of doesn't fit naturally just into a road trip, but it's definitely worth going
Yeah,
to.
and I would also say, just to close out California, you have between San Francisco and LA, you've got many international airports you can use. LAX is probably the most prominent. You're going to get direct flights from Heathrow easily. But San Francisco International, I believe there are also direct flights. I don't know that there'll be one for San Diego, but either way, you can kind of play around with that. And you can somewhat easily combine Northern and Southern California. It's roughly a 5 to 6 hour drive between the two regions. So if you're taking the freeway, it could be a full day drive if you do the coast highway. But I would suggest going one way and going back the other. And you could do that in a 10 to 14 day if you do everything and get the full. But yeah, going back to Vegas, that it is actually something. You can plan a layover if you just wanted to go and see the strip and experience some of the resorts. There's not really any standout rides. You have the Togo coaster at New York, New York, which Premier Rides put Skyrocket trains on it. So now it's actually more comfortable than it's ever been. You can actually ride it. It was pretty rough around the edges up until when they put those trains on it. So you have that. You have the Circus Adventure Dome, which has an old Aero looping coaster and SNS El Loco coaster, similar to the ride at Flamingoland. And then one other layover option that I was going to mention, we talked a little bit about Lagoon, Salt Lake City. It's very remote, but it is a hub for Delta. Which would be Virgin Atlantic as well. So I'm sure that would be a good place to stop over for a long weekend or something. And you have Park City, Utah, which is only 45 minutes away, even if it's in summer and not ski season. It's a spectacular place in the mountains. You're, 10,000 feet altitude. It's really something. But Lagoon is a spectacular park, and it is worth the effort it takes to get there. They put attention to detail into things that most parks can't justify. They just do the right amount of theming. The operations are great. The mix of rides are very unique. You have Cannonball, which is a 200-foot coaster with a beyond vertical drop that uses an elevator inside of this building. It's just, it's very atypical. There's nothing typical about Lagoon, and I think that's what makes it.
Wow. I mean, there's a lot to take in. There's so many options. And this is the thing about the US, and this is kind of why we've done this little series, because it can seem overwhelming with so many parks to choose from. But I think what you've done is given us a little taste of what we can expect at each of these areas, which might help make the decision a little bit easier, maybe, or it might have just complicated things because they all sound so good. But yeah, it's been fantastic for you to do this for us. Really, really appreciate it. And hopefully, if you're listening to this, you've had some ideas and you are planning your own little US road trip as well.
I'd love to know if anyone's actually managed to do some of this. That'd be really interesting to find out
Yeah, or if you're
if anyone's
planning a
or
trip.
planning it. That'd be really interesting to know which ones you're going for. Which have you got a particular one, Bex? Go on, which
Well,
ones interest you the most?
I just keep coming back to Cedar Point, don't I? Because it's just the one that's been on my bucket list forever. And
Of
obviously, if I
course.
go and do Cedar Point, then I can come and see Mark as well at King's Island. So,
Yeah, I mean, I would be very upset if he came to Ohio and just said, I'm only here to ride Raptor. I'm not here to see Mark.
I know, yeah.
Raptor, Steel Vengeance, come on. But
Definitely.
yeah, so I think that's always got to be the one that I need to do first. But I really, really would love to go to California, especially because I am massively and embarrassingly into Selling Sunset. So I mean, I just want to go and see the Oppenheim Group headquarters.
There you go.
That's something you didn't know, guys.
It is my guilty pleasure. But yeah, it's been brilliant. I know you're super busy, obviously, with everything at 3DX Scenics. And you're off to IAPA which is another one of my bucket lists. I mean, there's a road trip in itself. I would literally go just to go to IAAPA. And that's just around the corner. And Intamin had teased something new with little green headlights, which looks exciting, and you can be there. And I'm hoping you're going to be able to bring us some feedback from it and let us know what you thought. But we will cross that bridge after it's happened.
Absolutely.
As always, Mark, absolute pleasure speaking to you. The most knowledgeable man in US roller coaster history.
Well, don't say history. I mean, there are other people who probably know more, but I appreciate that.
I think you should write a book. Yeah. I think we need a book. Yeah.
I would love to hear feedback from your listeners, you know, if they are sending you messages and either reporting back on trips they've taken or further questions. I mean, I'm happy to answer more. So just, you know, send questions to Bex.
Yeah.
So your inbox will be full and then I can just sit back and decide what I will.
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. I'd love to hear from you. As always, if you haven't already, do hit subscribe so that you never miss a future episode. We are going to be here all the way up to Christmas. So even though our parks are closing, Parkcast is not closing. We are still here talking about theme parks. So it can be a little theme park fix if you're missing it. And if you subscribe, you won't miss an episode. And if you want to leave us a review, send us a message, let us know what trips you're planning, whatever you fancy. You can always slide into my DMs. They're always open. And we'd love to hear from you. For now, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.